Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Wednesday. And now we say hello to John McClain. He's presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW. That's where we were on Friday when we spent a whole hour with Jeff Fisher, John, right after you. And he was very excited to be able to follow you and had some nice things to say. I know you two obviously were very close.
Yeah, I'll never forget the first time I talked to Jeff was, after the 1993 season, he was coaching with the 49ers, and I was at the Pro Bowl, and their staff was coaching the NFC, and I heard that Buddy Ryan, who had been there 1 year as a defensive coordinator in 93 when the Oilers had the best and nastiest and dirtiest defense in the NFL, and they went 12-4 and lost to the Chiefs in the divisional round, but in Joe Montana's last miracle. But I called Floyd and told him I woke him up, told him that I heard he'd given permission for Buddy Ryan to talk to the Cardinals, and he admitted he did. He said, don't attribute it to me. So, and then it dawned on me that the only guy who knew Buddy Ryan's defense in the NFL was right there in the same hotel I was in. So I called Jeff's room, and his wife, Julie, answered. And I told Julie why I was calling. She said she'd have him call me, and he did. And I remember, I'll never forget, we had a guy for the Houston Post who had covered the 49ers. And so when Jeff called me, I said, well, I have some information that I think you're going to want to know, but I have to make sure that about coming to the Oilers. And I said, but I got to make sure you're not going to tell Richard. I can't remember his last name now. And he said, well, if you and I are going to work together, you'll know that I'm an honest guy. And what if I give you my word, it's good. And I said, well, that's good enough for me. I said, Buddy, I believe he's going to the Cardinals, and they're going to call you and offer you a job as defensive coordinator. So they hadn't at that time, but they did, and that was how I met Jeff on the phone and soon met him in person. It turned out to be one of the best moves in franchise history, and it was only Floyd's second year as general manager.
Yeah, and I mean, he made the change pretty quick in 94, and as you say, the rest is history. Looking at the current Houston team, NFL.com did a deal of, you know, players that they think can bounce back in 2025. Obviously, C.J. Stroud did not have the same year that he had in his rookie year, but I attribute a lot of that to being sacked 52 times. They've completely redone the offensive line. Do you feel like that Stroud is due for a comeback to be one of the better quarterbacks in the AFC?
I see that around the NFL. People obviously have no clue what they're talking about, because they didn't see every team on this, every play of this team. I attribute everything to the offensive line and other pass protectors. Not only was he sacked the second most, and some of those are not the line, some of them are his fault, but he was pressured more than any quarterback. They had a lineman beaten at the snap, at least one lineman beaten at the snap, could be more than any team in the league. So what the pressure he was under, unless you watched every play, you wouldn't know it. And another thing I thought was interesting, I read one of the national things after the season trying to make a case for it not being so much on the line as it was on Stroud, because he had X points, say 3.5 seconds to throw. And I'm thinking, geez, you idiot, that's because he was running around like crazy being chased. And but anyway, could he bounce back and be better? You have to get better protection, but you don't want to have an offensive line. They brought in five, and the crew that they put out on the field during the off-season program, they would have a new left tackle, a new left guard, a new center, a right guard, Titus Howard, who started at left guard last year but has been a regular right tackle. And their right tackle, Blake Fisher, started, I think, five games as a rookie because of injuries. And so I doubt seriously that's going to be the line they put out for their opener at the Rams, just because injuries, because guys are going to do better when they put on pads. I love reading things about, like, Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr., who should be one of the best pass rush duos in the league, how many times they beat the offensive linemen in the OTAs. And I'm like, you can't put on pads. You can't hit anybody. What are you talking about? You know, that is so unfair to the offensive linemen. Now, when they put on the pads, they're going to get beat by those two anyway. But so much is put in to the OTAs by media when you can't put on pads, which is preposterous. But as a long answer, I would think if he is protected better, not so much the sacks, but the constant pressure, yes, he'll have a better season. Last season, there was not a time that he was issued. And I think Chris Sims said on his show with Florio this week that I disagree with this totally. He wouldn't be surprised to see the Texans in the Super Bowl. And he said because of the issue was not Stroud, and it was the protection, and it was the coaching. But they still got another first-time play caller in Nick Gailey, who came from the Rams. He's also the first-time coordinator. And their offensive line coach, Cole Popovich, was the backup last year. And for them to elevate him, and they let Kaylee wanted that, and they signed off on it. It meant he didn't get a chance to do a lot last year. I thought they'd get rid of him because of guilt by association, but they showed a lot of confidence in him. And everybody's talking about Kaylee. I said, the most important assistant coach on this team is not Nick Kaylee. It's Cole Popovich, because Kaylee can call the greatest plays in history. But if you can't block up front, it doesn't matter.
Amen to that. John McClain is on the Chase and Big Joe show today. Speaking of the Houston Texans, John, they upset the apple cart. You know where I'm going with this. When they gave Jaden Higgins their second-round pick, the guaranteed contract. Now, only two of 32 second-round picks are unsigned. All eyes are now on the Seahawks because they're next in the pecking order. But, John, if a team with like the 45th or the 48th pick gives a guaranteed contract, these floodgates could open. Is this a concern now, or will it be a concern August 1st?
I think it's a concern August 1st, Joe. And the Texans have another second-round pick, Minnesota offensive tackle Arianta Hursery, who they have high hopes for. And there's talk that he could be a starter, not right off the bat, but take over left tackle over new left tackle Cam Robinson, who's on a one-year deal. So that's hurt him in negotiations with him. So how does Nick Caserio, his agent, says, well, look, you did it with Jaden Higgins. Why won't you do it with my guy? Why did you do it with him? So, yeah, Nick Caserio's got a lot of people angry at him because it's this kind of deal. For players, they make improvements grudgingly and eventually say all the twos get guaranteed contracts, and then next year is going to be threes. They won't guarantee contracts. So, really, it's collusion, and that's a dirty word in the NFL. Mm. For all those second-round picks, none of them get it. Just like Cincinnati. I mean, I don't blame Shamar Stewart, the defensive end, for the clause that they did not put in a Marion Sims contract last year. They're trying to stick him with. I don't blame him for saying, I want that same deal, and they won't give it to him, so he just left during the minicamp and went home to College Station. So it usually, if we get to training camp, say get it, is it like you said, Joe, August the 1st, if you got all these second rounders out, it's going to be a huge issue.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW here on the Chase and Big Joe show, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. John McClain on with us, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW.
Take John, break. I know we're in the summer season. A lot of stories out there. Do deep dive in the stories. I was reading one about Pete Carroll and the Raiders and how his infectious attitude and positivity has infected that entire organization. Why does Pete Carroll, Johnny, you know Pete, you've covered him for a long time. He'll turn 74 in September. Why does this work for him? Why is this guy so beloved, especially by former coaches, players, and staff?
I'll tell you a story that a friend of mine who coached with Bill Parcells at New England and coached with Pete when Pete was the head coach. And he was talking about the difference in those two. His difference is night and day, where Bill was so tough on the players. And he said where Pete was younger, Pete was a player's coach, and the discipline that Parcells had installed would last about a season. And then that discipline was going to go by the wayside. And at some point, Pete Carroll would learn. He'd be a player's coach, and he'd want to hang out and players and listen to loud music while he's doing game plans and things like that. But if he learned how to still have discipline, it'd help him have a good career. And at that point, the jury was out, and he got fired from New England. But obviously, he learned because, you know, he went to two Super Bowls. He won a national championship at USC. And I think Pete is just a very enthusiastic person. He stays in great shape. He bounces all over the place. He mingles with the players, but yet he's learned through the decades how to be tough, how to lay down the law. And sometimes he puts the boundaries up, and if you cross, and those boundaries give you a lot of latitude. Because you remember the guys he had on the Legion of Boom? You know, he had some characters on there. He had some guys that got in trouble, but they won, and they have great respect for him. And I think he's doing it there. And he is so happy to be a head coach again. You know, they ran him out of Seattle, and he wanted to come back. I didn't know if he'd ever get another job, but I was really happy that he did. In that division, you think of those head coaches in that division, three of them destined for the Hall of Fame for sure. I don't know about Jim Harbaugh, but he's got a lot more to do. But that's maybe the most impressive division when it comes to head coaches there's ever been. And Pete Carroll's right in the mix, about to turn 74 and feels like he's 34.
When you talk about,
like he's 34.
Look, he's one of the best, I guess, people that I've met, you know, having worked with Floyd. We're sitting there at the combine, and Pete comes over, and he's messing with me. You know, he's never met me before, just like picking at me. And I'm like, this is Pete Carroll. Like, what are we doing here? And was just one of the nicest people. And you can tell he just loves ball.
He does love ball. And that's a great way to put it. And he's that way 24/7. And I'm glad he's back in the league because he's good for the league. And it'd be getting Pete Carroll and Ashton Jenny, who I think is going to be offensive rookie of the year, is a great move for them. And obviously he loves Geno Smith because he brought Geno to Seattle. Pete had final say on all personnel there. John Schneider did not. And now John Schneider does. But, I don't think he has final say in Las Vegas. I'm not sure. But he got the quarterback he wanted. He got the first-round pick he wanted. And I think he's proven enough over his career. He's a pretty shrewd personnel guy.
Speaking of some new coaches, I am really curious about Liam Cohen in Jacksonville and how that's going to work out. I mean, I know he's, you know, a pretty good offensive mind and, you know, comes from a lot of the same trees, but, you know, with Trevor Lawrence, how do you think that relationship is going to work? And can he get the full potential out of Lawrence that everybody's been waiting for?
Well, that's something remains to be seen, but considering his track record with quarterbacks, I would say if anybody's going to, it would be him. And Lawrence has not been worth the first overall pick. He's not been a generational quarterback. It doesn't mean he can't be for the next 10 years. And we see that happen. Sometimes they got to change teams before they realize their potential. Look at Baker Mayfield and what he did, including working with Cohen. So I would say the odds are pretty good that we're going to see a better, maybe not a spectacular, but a better Trevor Lawrence this season in the AFC South.
You know, John, we talk about Will Levis here. You know, what's the gauge for him? Does he stay? Does he go? If you're going to trade for a Will Levis, another team, do you do it before camp, middle camp, before the season starts, right before that week? Because I'm trying to remember the last time. I know we went through the Billy Volek, Vince Young mess here in 2006, and they brought in Kerry Collins, and that was just an odd time. But if you're going to go and pull the trigger on a Will Levis, do you do it before camp starts, or do you see him go through a couple of joint practices and then say, all right, I want him now?
I think you wait until somebody makes you a decent offer. Now, really, what would you give for Will Levis? A seven? A six? I think that, and if anybody's going to do it, would it be Liam Cohen?
Yeah.
Because they were together at Kentucky. But I wouldn't give up on Levis yet. I mean, he's not going to be the starter. But what are the odds that Cam Ward's going to start 17 games, a rookie? Not good. And so at some point, they're going to need another quarterback. And Levis, if he played a little bit, like look what happened to Joe Milton last year. I thought the Patriots should have kept him around.
And, that might bite
them. If he gets to play a little more, then you might get a better pick. I thought that was a really good deal by the Cowboys. So you never know. You keep him. If he gets an opportunity, maybe he plays well and the price goes up. Because there's no hurry to move it because you're not going to get squat.
Yeah, that's right. And right now the backup quarterback for the Jags is Nick Mullins. And so if you get somebody in there who knows your system that you're comfortable with, we all assume Jacksonville at some point will pull the trigger on Will Levis just to wait and see. But obviously with the relationship he has with Liam Cohen, that's a nice landing spot. But I'm like you, John. If I know this team's going to release him and I don't have to give anything up, I'm just going to sit back and wait and see what happens.
I think the best thing for them to do, let him play in preseason, see what he does in joint practices, see if he's a different quarterback. And that's not going to be a good measure. The real measure would be if he gets an opportunity to play in a game. There's, because the way Cam Ward runs and moves as much as he does, and the odds are he's going to get hurt at some point, and you hope he's only misses one game. And if Levis were to go in and play like, say, Milton played, all of a sudden people take notice. This guy's turned the corner, and you can get him for a low pick, which might, instead of be a seven, might be a five, a conditional four. You just never know. There's no hurry. If they had not been in a hurry, they would have done it already. And they just sit back, relax, and let it play out.
You know, it's funny, John, you get Titans fans all in rage when you ask them and say, what if when they open that season at Denver, if all things considered equal, if Will Levis is a starting quarterback and Cam Ward's not, and Titans fans lose their mind on that. So we'll see what happens that first game in the Mile High City.
I'd be surprised if Cam Ward is not the starter. Every year he's been from high school and college, he's improved. And you don't get better sitting on the bench. Maybe a first game, something, a second, third, but it's only a matter of time. And when you're the first overall pick, the odds are you're going to be starting right away. And they've improved their offensive line. I think Tony Pollard will be better this season than last season. And the key is, as you guys know, who's going to catch the ball. And so I think Ward will be such an exciting player. Rookies tend to look down the field, and when they don't see somebody make a play, they run too much. But he's such a good runner, and he's smart. And you take a guy that's improved every single year since he started playing quarterback in high school, the odds are he's going to do a lot of improving while he's playing for the Titans.
John, I'll say this real quick about Levis. Joe and I were at an event last week. It was the Professional Fighters League that they had here. Levis was sitting right in front of us with his family, and they announced him and some other Titans. J.C. Latham was there, a few others, at Tony Pollard, and they announced Levis, and there were some boos, and he kind of laughed it off. And anybody that came up to him and asked for a picture, he did it. He shook hands. He played the role of the quarterback. You know, he the body language was great. So I'll give him that, I mean, even in this situation, I think he's carried himself well and said the right thing. So he at least has that going for him.
Well, he's being evaluated every day by potential suitors.
Sure.
And things, if he carries himself like that everywhere he goes, that gets back to teams, and that's tremendous for him when it's time to getting a new zip code.
John, thanks so much as always. We'll do it again next week.
Guys, thank you very much. As always, I do appreciate it.
John McClain, presented by Maple Street Biscuits, Wake Up to WOW, joins us every Wednesday at 9:30 here on the program. Coming up next, I have a question for you guys, and it's definitely a summer topic, but a good topic, I think, and I want some participation. 615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Who is the next Nashville athlete to get a statue? They're building a new Titan Stadium. Could there be some statues out front? I want to discuss. We'll do that next. Chasing Big Joe, 1025, 106.3 The Game.